KTD News. I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD-HD. I'm Gregory Berg. That beautiful music is by a composer that I suspect you have never heard of. I know that I am not familiar with the name of Gregorius Trehu. He is one of the composers whose music is going to be featured in what promises to be an absolutely delightful night of beautiful music this Friday night, a concert which is being called Christmas in the Court of the Danish King. And this is an opportunity to experience some truly lovely choral music just off the beaten path. And the group that is going to be presenting it is none other than the Bell Ensemble, which is a brand new group which has been formed by Nicholas Berudian. And he joined us earlier in the fall to talk about a special program being presented in memory of those who were victims of the Armenian massacre of 100 years ago. This event, a little happier note, is going to feature a wide array of beautiful holiday music, but again, most of it relatively unfamiliar. And so we're going to talk with Nick in part one of today's program about Friday night's concert. In part two of today's morning show, we'll be talking about something else happening later in the weekend, the sing-along Messiah in Kenosha. But first, Christmas in the Court of the Danish King, and Nick Berudian, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg. It's good to be here.
Good to be talking to you. Ahead of us talking specifically about Friday night's concert and hearing a little more music from what you're planning to offer, I want to ask you about something I'm noticing here. The sort of introductory paragraph at the bottom says here, the Bell Ensemble under the direction of Nicholas Berudian is a singers' collective dedicated to the performance of live vocal chamber music for Racine and its neighbors. Explain to our listeners and to me, for that matter, what you mean by the term singers' collective.
The term is meant to not mislead, first of all. An ensemble, I usually think of an ensemble as a certain number of specific people that appear together. Whether that's a quartet or an octet or some larger group. The programs that Bell Ensemble will be presenting this year and in the future, I don't expect to be that uniform. Especially in this, our founding year, we have probably a dozen and a half singers that will be involved in some way or another in at least one concert. And you'll see some of them in each concert, but you won't see the same six people at every concert.
Right. So it's going to vary according to, I suppose, people's schedules and also maybe according to people's interests or how their gifts fold into a given opportunity. I mean, for instance, if I think your one of your first performances, that was downtown, and I forget, but wasn't it
and
a
that
lot?
That was just a quartet and a pianist, a quartet of singers, and
it was all German music, I think, right?
Exactly.
And this is maybe something that might call for different singers, or might not. Some might feel comfortable going into both. So it's a group that, in a sense, shifts sometimes slightly, maybe sometimes dramatically, from concert to concert.
Mm-hmm. One of my goals is to have in the future at least a formal outer definition of our membership, say somewhere between 18 and 24 singers that I can call upon for ideas, and we can be creative together in putting together programs surrounding repertoire that each of us are interested in. At this point, it's a lot of pulling together individuals and working with their interests too, but we're in the first year where it's pretty amorphous at times.
Right. Hey, but that's part of what makes it exciting. So you did your opening German program, and then I just mentioned the program at the Siena Center that was commemorating the Armenian massacre of a genocide of 100 years ago. And now there is this festive program, Christmas in the Court of the Danish King. First of all, tell us what prompted this really intriguing idea for a program.
I don't remember where I first heard about King Christian IV. But I ran across this figure in history, and what sparked my attention was a simple mention of how he was a king dedicated to the arts and architecture. And so a little investigation led me to realize he was, in a very big way, a patron of music and a builder of many of Copenhagen's still most famous buildings. There's some fiction written about his reign, novels, you know, historical fiction, imagining what it would have been like, and I started to imagine what that would be like to be a member of his singers, a member of the court chapel or something, and discovered all of this music that has come out of his reign. The music from his court composers and from composers that he drew from other countries to Denmark is among the earliest that we still have from that country. So that's part of what really sparked my interest is probing the depths of history and scraping up these sometimes even fragments of music.
So when exactly did he live, or when did he reign?
King Christian was born in 1577, and his father died in 1588 when he was only 11 years old. So there was a group of statesmen, a council that ruled for him for several years. He reigned officially then from 1596 to 1648. So when you think about, just for some context, you know, Johann Sebastian Bach was born after the reign of King Christian.
Decades after.
Yeah. Even Buxtehude, who is recognized as one of the earliest Danish musicians of note, didn't really come on the scene. He was born, but wasn't practicing or producing any music during the reign of Christian the Fourth.
So how tricky was it to actually go out and find some of this music? I mean, it's one thing to find a couple of interesting compact discs and hear music that you very much want to sing. It's another thing to lay your hands on the music itself. Was that difficult?
Some of it was quite difficult because the musicians in which this king was most interested he was most interested in promoting his own Danish musicians and raising them up and training them so that they would be of the same stature as those musicians from Germany and Italy and the Netherlands that he so admired. And so it was very much a building period for them. And the music, there's some really gorgeous music, but relatively little that actually came out of those Danish musicians that he patronized. On the other hand, some of it was remarkably easy to find because he was just such a big shot. And he, so King Christian the Fourth brought to his court, among others, Heinrich Schütz from Germany, the father of German music. And in fact, one of Schütz's entire collections of songs was dedicated to King Christian the Fourth. He also, Christian, was the brother of Anne of England, as in Queen Anne of James the First. And so he was well connected to England, enough that John Dowland, the famous lutenist from England, spent time in the Danish court.
I'm just seeing now on your program here then, so you have split your program between Danish composers and visitors. So we alternate, in a sense, between the two.
Yes, and that's not a perfect division. I'll provide more explanation at the concert. But there are sections that are dedicated specifically to the native Danish composers that were patronized and even educated in under Christian's fostering.
So in the matter of actually finding the music, I mean, do you have any rough sense at least of the things you wanted to do? I mean, were you able to find just about everything you looked for in terms of actual scores?
No, there's some, some things I'm very sad about. One of the names I ran across in my research was Hans Nielsen. He was one of the earliest Danish composers to really produce music and music of note. And yet his music has not, as far as I can tell, I mean, maybe it's out there somewhere, but I haven't been able to find it in a form other than photocopies of original manuscripts.
That would be very hard to make your way through, I suppose.
Yeah. On the other hand, some of it has been pretty well studied. It seems like the 1980s were a time when a lot of historical study was done, a musicological study, and there's an entire 7-volume set, in fact, dedicated to a 7 volumes published music from the Musicological Institute in Copenhagen of music from the time of Christian the Fourth. So that was very helpful, and some of the most beautiful music on our program came from that volume.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Nicholas Berudian, who is director and founder of the Bell Ensemble, and their next program is coming up this Friday night at Gethsemane Lutheran Church in Racine, a concert called Christmas in the Court of the Danish King. in which we are taken back to the time of King Christian IV, one of Denmark's greatest kings. And you're going to be treated to an evening of beautiful choral music, although actually we shouldn't really say that in a sense. It's really chamber vocal music, or at least that's the way it's being presented. I mean, was some of this intended for more standard choral forces, or is your sense that a lot of this was intended for a rather intimate group of people to sing?
They would have been small choirs. When Christian IV began his reign, he had 71 musicians under his in his service, and only about a third of those were part of the chapel, or as in organists and singers. So the choir wouldn't have been more than certainly 25 or 30 at any given time.
Explain to our listeners what we're talking about in terms of the musical challenges of singing music from this period, which would be pretty much the early Baroque period, maybe a thing here and there that is more a whiff of the late Renaissance, but earlier music than we tend to hear in public concerts. What are the challenges that are involved, and particularly when we're talking about one person on a part?
Well, among other things, the notation is often an issue. The kind of the way that they wrote music back then was in many ways different, and we're grateful now to live in a time when some very smart people have produced editions of music from this period that is in our current notation so that we can read it well. But there are still issues involved in interpreting rhythmic changes. The music of this period demands a kind of it is unforgiving in some ways to begin with, just because the lines are so clean and pure compared to what you'd often hear in a choral setting nowadays, where more lush sonorities are popular. Here you have some very rich harmonies, but created by these moving lines of just a few notes. And so it really leaves the singers kind of bare, you know. The slight imperfections that would otherwise be forgiving, even if you were a soloist singing Puccini or something, are just more exposed in some ways.
So this really demands a kind of perfection that when you have 40 people in a group, I mean, you can aim for it, but you really want to have something that is quite pristine. And I suspect this has been a really interesting challenge for your singers, and I suspect for most of them, most of this music is utterly unknown to them, I mean, before they started working on it.
Yeah, there hasn't been a mutiny yet, but some of the singers were very excited about this concert, and some of them have experienced at least periods of frustration because of some of the difficulties of it. It's partly in the nature of the music, but partly because we're doing it as chamber music with one voice per part, that only adds to the exposure of each voice, and it makes a whole nother element of the rehearsal, which is the combining of these voices. When you're a singer in a section of a choir, there's a way in which your particular color fits in. It tends to contribute in a mixed up way with the other voices. And here you've just, you know, you are the alto, and you are the tenor, and those need to balance each other in a more subtle way, I think.
Right. Interesting. I'm looking at on the program and seeing Latin and seeing English, and I assume seeing Danish as well. So
that's right.
So it's those three languages.
and even a little German because of Heinrich Schütz, who visited the court on three occasions. One of the pieces comes from a collection in which he wrote much in Latin, but some in his native native German.
I know you have a second piece that you're anxious for us to hear. Which one is this?
This comes from Thomas Schottenberg, a composer who produced one of the earliest collections that we have of Danish music, in the sense that it was it's a Danish text. Set by a Danish composer. This was published in 1620. It's a poem by attributed to Bernard of Clairvaux, and so it's devotional music. We're going to listen to O Beatum Incendium.
Okay. Here it is. O Beatum Incendium by Schottenberg, one of the Danish composers whose music is featured on this concert Friday night. Nick, you were saying that some of his music is lost, and I suppose that's one of the sad aspects of working with the music of more obscure composers, is that in many cases, because they are no longer well-known, or maybe even their own day weren't widely well-known, some of their music has never been really officially published or officially distributed and is lost to us.
Thomas Schottenberg, who we just heard, was a composer. Well, he wasn't primarily a composer. He was an organist and the musician, the chief musician at St. Nicholas Church in Copenhagen, which was not the biggest and not directly connected, tied with the royal family or anything. I mean, he was just kind of a church musician. And so it's kind of a miracle that we even have what we have of his.
Good point. The concert Friday night is going to be at Gethsemane Lutheran Church in Racine. Can you just say a word about that particular choice? It's a lovely space. But I don't know that you have any personal connection to it yourself, for instance, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I mean, other than people that I happen to know there growing up in Racine, Gethsemane is one of several churches that have deep Danish roots in Racine. Bethania Lutheran Church is also one of them and has a number of exciting Danish activities going on every year. Gethsemane, because it is right on Washington Avenue and kind of the heart of West Racine, I thought was a really good option. And the space is beautiful to sing in. When I proposed it to Pastor Klingman, who this past summer started as pastor there and at Emmanuel. He was intrigued by the possibility and thought he might know somebody that would be pretty excited about it. And one of his members, Rosemary Fay, was and is very excited about it. She's been, I can't say how helpful she's been in putting this concert together. So I'm really grateful for her and for Pastor Klingman and the people of Gethsemane.
Mm. So remind people who show up for this concert Friday night, what are they going to experience?
You will hear music from the court of King Christian IV. It's early Baroque, late Renaissance, kind of transitional period music. You will not hear Jingle Bells or Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. So I don't want anybody to come and be disappointed by that. But what you will hear is beautiful and pretty old music in Danish and English and a lot in Latin and some even in German. The concert's at 7 p.m. and is expected to run about an hour and 20 minutes, about an hour 30. We have, it's free, so there's no admission charge, though we certainly accept and encourage donations. In fact, to further encourage donations, we have a raffle. Larson's Bakery of West Racine has been so generous as to donate a kringle a month for a year to the winner of this raffle. And so so we hope that you'll come and participate in that too. But mostly we hope that you'll come and enjoy this beautiful music.
Right. And it's not the kind of music you'll hear as you're walking around Walgreens playing over the loudspeaker. This is something rarer and I dare say much more beautiful. Christmas in the Court of the Danish King with the Bell Ensemble under the direction of Nicholas Berutian. Nick, it sounds like you've put together yet another very intriguing and lovely program. So best wishes to you and your musicians for Friday night's concert.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Part two of today's morning show coming up in just a moment here on WGTD. The time is 8:38. You are listening to the morning show on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and Classical Music on your gateway to public radio. Before we get to part two of today's program, the Sing-Along Messiah, we want to mention that those of you who were hoping to attend the Racine Theater Guild's production of Mary Poppins sometime during this coming weekend, the final weekend. I'm sad to report, although also happy to report, that this weekend is completely sold out. So there are no tickets remaining for Mary Poppins. You are still welcome to call the box office and get on what is, I'm afraid, a fairly lengthy waiting list. The phone number there for the box office is 633-4218. But Mary Poppins is sold out for this coming weekend, the final weekend of performances. Here is part two of today's morning show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio.
Such a child is born.
This, of course, is music from George Frideric Handel's oratorio Messiah, one of the most beloved and familiar of all masterworks. And Messiah is sung each and every year as part of the Fine Arts at First series at First United Methodist Church in Kenosha. And this is the 11th annual Sing-Along Messiah coming up. And Jessica DeBoer is the coordinator of the whole Fine Arts at First series. And she is joining us for part two of today's program. We're going to play one or two excerpts from this wonderful work and talk a little bit about what people can experience on Sunday evening. The Sunday evening Messiah begins at 6 o'clock at First United Methodist Church, which is at the corner of Sheridan Road and 60th Street. Jessica, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Great. Thanks for having me back.
Before we talk about Messiah, let's remind people about this wonderful series called Fine Arts at First. Remind us about when this got put together in the first place and sort of what its the heart and soul of its purpose is.
Sure. Fine Arts at First started in the fall of 2005. Our church had been given a gift of our grand piano. If you've been to the shows, if you've been to the concerts, you've seen it. It's the giant piano. You can't miss it. And it was such a tremendous gift. Its worth is so great. And we are so blessed to have it. And we thought, we can't just play this on Sunday morning for our congregation and be done with it. We have to share this with Kenosha and Racine. And so we thought, David Scripsema and our then pastor, Linda Farmer Lewis, started this series up, and it's been going ever since. And so sharing the piano is really the main impetus of why we started Fine Arts at First.
So remind people of what has happened this year with Fine Arts at First before
Sure.
Sing Along Messiah.
We had in September, we had Unjo Kwok. She did a piano recital, and it was unbelievably fantastic. She did the Chopin funeral march, and it was just amazing. The piano was so happy to be played so expertly. And then in November, we had choirs from Carthage and Parkside, also Aurora University and Rock Valley College, and they did an overview of the music of Abby Betinas,
right,
who's an American composer, and it was just stunning. Each group made such great contributions to that concert, and it was just beautiful. So Messiah is next up in line. So.
And then following that?
Following that, we have the Fifth House Ensemble is coming on Valentine's Day next year. We have you're putting me on the spot. In March, we're having the Master Singers of Milwaukee, March 13, and that's directed by Carthage's own Eduardo Garcia Novelli. In April, April 17, we have Frank Almond, violin concertmaster of the Milwaukee Symphony. And then May 15, if that's the right date, Sunday, May 15, we have our Fine Arts Jazz Ensemble doing a concert of jazz for all seasons. So, you know, any jazz tune that has a season in it, you'll probably hear it that day at our jazz concert.
Excellent. Just a wonderful series. And these concerts are free and open to the public.
Absolutely.
And it's just this absolutely stupendous gift that's being given to the community. So what's your own history with Handel's Messiah, this splendid oratorio? When did you first hear it or play it or sing it?
Well, I grew up in a really musical house. My dad sings, my mom sings, and you know, my mom, when we were kids, my sister and my brother and I, when we were kids, my mom stayed home, and she every year would bake 100 dozen Christmas cookies. Yeah, that's a lot of cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And I have very vivid memories of her in the kitchen cooking, baking cookies, and singing along to Messiah. It's playing in the background. And that's just, you know, you can't have Christmas without Messiah in my house. So, and then I did the very first time I played the full piece was in college.
We should mention you're a violist.
I am. I'm a violist. Mm-hmm. That's true. And so I did the entire Messiah with an Episcopal church that did one part. They did the Christmas portion, and then in the spring they did the Easter portion, and so did the whole thing then. But then, you know, of course, at Christmas time you always play a little bit here, a little bit there, different orchestras. So, yeah.
How hard is it to play?
For Baroque composers and as a violist, you know, viola parts tend to be a little less exciting than violin parts, perhaps. But for Handel, it is so much fun to play. It is so much fun to play. It's not terribly difficult, but you really have to be on your toes. Mm. It's not just your average, you know, background eighth notes, boring part. You really have to be aware and focused to play. It's a lot of fun, but you do have to be on your toes.
Right. One of the things I appreciate as the conductor of this event is that you always seem so diligent in gathering together as good an orchestra as you possibly can, and that they're good players and also nice, patient people.
Yes, we have so much fun. And, you know, the same people keep coming back every year. I think, you know, I was looking at the roster of musicians for this concert, and I think there's only two people coming this year that have not done Messiah with us before.
Huh.
And so, you know, it's the same group of people every year. And I was emailing information to them a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and I, you know, at the end of the email, I said, I know this is going to sound corny, but I love this concert. It's my favorite concert every year, and I'm so happy you all are coming back. And I got so many replies saying, oh, it's my favorite concert too, and I'm so happy, I can't wait. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it's a big deal for those people, and we're all excited, looking forward to it.
Of course, what sets this aside from a more standard performance of Handel's Messiah is the fact that it is a sing-along Messiah, and of course, that's not typically the way it's done, and certainly nothing that Handel had in mind.
No.
So for someone who's listening at home and wondering, what do they even mean, sing-along Messiah? Who does the singing along? Explain what happens.
Sure. Well, there's different types of pieces that you hear in Messiah. Of course, there's instrumental pieces. Then there's pieces that are sung by soloists or maybe a vocal duet. And then there's choruses, and what you just heard, For Unto Us a Child is Born, that's a chorus where, you know, typically you'd have a big choir singing the parts, but instead of a choir singing the parts, the audience is the choir. And so you're going to sit in your voice section. There's a, you know, there'll be signs where you can see soprano, alto, tenor, bass, and you sit wherever, whatever voice you sing. And when the time comes, you turn around. Well, Greg turns around and sings, or, you know, directs the audience and helps you enter when you need to and gives you a cue. And then you just follow along. The church has parts. So if you don't own the music, you can get a part when you show up. But the important thing to remember is you don't have to sing. You don't have to sing. Don't be afraid to come because you're thinking you're going to be having to sing. You don't have to sing. You can just come and listen. So don't let that scare you off
right.
from attending.
It's interesting when you look up. I mean, primarily the back balcony is where the non-singers
the
sit,
yep.
And that is often packed.
Absolutely.
And of course, people to the very back of the main floor sanctuary are also among the non-singers.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a fairly potent number of people who come not to sing, but rather to listen.
Right, right. So, So that's the main thing to remember. Don't be afraid. You don't have to sing, but you can, and it's fun. I mean, when are you going to get the chance to do that unless you are a member of a choir that decides to program the Messiah 1 year? So
right.
It's a good chance to do that.
One of the things that always intrigues me when I look out over the audience is that you have people coming in with dog-eared scores of Messiah that they've used year after year after year after year. And then you see high school students who are most likely singing much of this music, at least for the very first
right.
time in their lives.
Right.
And it's just sort of fun to think about that span of experience that is represented in that group of people.
Yep, definitely. It's you know, you don't have to be an opera star to come and sing. You can just pick up the music and do your best. You know, I certainly couldn't sing at all if I had to sit in the audience and do it. But I do my best, and it's fun, and that's the whole point.
The quartet of soloists that is on hand this time all have very strong connections to this event in one way or another. In fact, Jennifer Hansen, who's the soprano, a UW Parkside graduate, now doing graduate work at the University of Wisconsin, Minnesota, very fine soprano. Her initial participation happened under less than ideal circumstances.
Yes, 2 years ago, it snowed and snowed and snowed, and it, you know, Saturday it snowed, and I was so nervous, and I thought, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Are we going to have to cancel Messiah? We can't cancel Messiah. Mm. And it snowed and snowed and snowed, and it finally stopped on Sunday afternoon. And Sarah Gorky, who sang with us almost every year, had gone up to Marshfield to her parents. I think they had a Christmas party or something that she had to go, and you know, she knew the weather was going to be bad, and you guys had been talking, and so she just decided wisely that she should not be driving back in this giant snowstorm that we had gotten. And so fortunately, you had heard about Jennifer and had contacted her, and she stepped in at the last moment and sang beautifully, and we thought, well, good to meet someone new. Unfortunately, you had to do it at the last minute, but it was okay. She was great.
So. Absolutely. So, yeah, she deputized so graciously, did a fantastic job. And last year we had the two of them share the duties for the special 10th annual. And this year with Sarah now relocated to Madison, Jennifer is our soprano. We're delighted to have her back again. Our alto is someone who actually belongs to First United Methodist, but a very fine alto.
Yes, Libby Weisinger. She is a member of our church and a member of our church choir. And, you know, we love to have her every year. I think she's one of the very few people who's done every single Messiah.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone that I've been part of anyway. Our tenor is a student who just graduated from Carthage last May, Nick Huff, who is now studying at Eastman. And I know you're happy that Nick is able to return for this year's sing-along.
Last year was his first one, and I just remember him getting up there and you know, in the rehearsal and singing, and you know, all of us were just blown away. We thought, wow, this guy's a Carthage student. Yes, you know, now we're so glad he's coming back.
Right.
Because he would just knock your socks off.
Here's a little taste of what Nick did in last year's Messiah. So this is the very first solo that is sung just after the overture. This is the recitative, Comfort Ye My People. Some pretty splendid singing there from young tenor Nick Huff, who
Definitely.
Is back to be our tenor soloist. And another young man with a Carthage connection is back as our bass.
Yes, Mike Anderle. He sang last year as well. We had a big 10th anniversary celebration last year, and we invited all sorts of soloists to come. And he sang with us last year. He also sang in February when we did the opera concert with Contralto Meredith Arwady. And he and Nick just both did a fantastic job.
And Mike, fortunately for us, is in the area as a student teacher. So he is around to, which is why he's still around, even though he's graduated from Carthage and was available and delighted to return as our bass soloist. Here's a little bit of the first thing that he'll be singing, But Who May Abide.
And who shall stand when he appeareth?
yet another taste of Handel's sing-along Messiah from last year. That's young man Mike Anderle from Racine, who will be back as our bass soloist. And that was a portion of But Who May Abide, the day of his coming. So, Jessica, how does one prepare for a big event like this where you really don't have too strong an idea of how many people are going to come? You just batten down the hatches?
Yep,
and
we pull out all the books. We get them all set up. We make the programs, and we cross our fingers and hope that we fill up the place.
Right. I mean, except for poor weather, it's always been a really well-received event. And even on a couple of occasions where it's been kind of nasty weather, it's amazing how many people will brave the elements to come be part of
this. Yes, that year that we had the bad snowstorm when Jennifer stepped in to sing, the audience was bigger than I expected, which was great. So you just never know. It's usually our biggest concert. So
right. So we want to remind people that this is Sunday night, December 20th. The Sing-Along Messiah begins at 6. You're encouraged to come nice and early, and there's going to be a lovely little prelude by a group called Musici Amici, all Carthage graduates. And then is there a reception afterwards, as there has been
in
the past?
There is, of course. There is. The doors open at 5:30, so you can come and get warmed up and get ready to sing. So we're just looking forward to having as many people come.
Absolutely. So that is Sunday night, December 20th, at First United Methodist Church, which is at the corner of Sheridan Road and 60th Street, an absolutely beautiful place for making music. So we hope a lot of people will find their way to First United Methodist for Sunday night's Sing-Along Messiah. And up front, playing alto, viola and enjoying every moment, is the coordinator of Fine Arts at First, Jessica DeBoer. Jessica, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com.